Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel for this Monday. It is the 7th of March, and it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel, and then I'll let you in on how you can be a part of our conversation this morning. Not that it's a closely guarded secret, but for those of you who perhaps haven't written it down, we'll pass that information on. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey.
Right. That's how we feel this morning, isn't it? Yeah. How are you? And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is back, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have her here.
Thank you. Morning.
Hello. And Libby Post joins us, political consultant to the stars, and joins us.
She has a defective microphone.
You know what happens
microphone.
To us all.
I know it does. Well, not all. Well, in different body parts. My mic is being a little
a limp saggy. Mic.
Yes. All right. You can fix it.
I can't. Yeah. Going like that?
There you go.
Okay, fine. Just
Excellent.
Bend it a little, right? Okay.
It makes it better. All right. Let's go to the part where you can be a part of the program. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the... is our address, our email address, roundtable@wamc.org. It was announced yesterday that Nancy Reagan, the influential and stylish wife of the 40th President of the United States, has died at 94 at her home in Los Angeles. The cause was congestive heart failure, according to a statement. She had been in frail and poor health for quite a while. So the words that come out over the last 24 hours about this woman and her legacy as being a fierce guardian of her husband's image. Rosemary is rolling her eyes.
No, well, I'm not.
Okay.
No, she
my mother has told me
eyes.
That when it comes to talking about my real feelings about Nancy Reagan, I must just say no. Don't do it.
Which is my Aunt Ruth would have said, is just so revealing about your character, Rosemary. You just have talked about why your mother said you couldn't do it, and at the same time, brilliantly, let us know how you felt about it.
Right. Well, this is the time, you know, we do obits and then we turn people into saints.
Right.
And we've done
it
with her husband, and now we're about to do it to her.
Okay, so the president said on Sunday that Mrs. Reagan, quote, had redefined the role of first lady, adding, later in her long goodbye with President Reagan, she became a voice on behalf of millions of families going through the depleting, aching reality of Alzheimer's and took on a new role as advocate on behalf of treatments that hold the potential and promise to improve and save lives. I thought that was a very nice statement.
It is, and I would point out that she also was a champion of stem cell research,
yes.
which was put down by Republicans. I found it odd that she found her greatness, these are great things she did, when she was on her own, when she was not being a wife and helpmate.
Well, it was also because Reagan himself had Alzheimer's, and this is the one place that you might find a cure for Alzheimer's.
She was
so
protective.
God bless her for that.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, that's fine, but, I mean, her children hated her. She redefined the White House.
I think she came to terms with her children.
Yeah, I think they all did. But you know, that's what happens later in life. But
there's something I don't know. As a feminist,
the
whole
thing.
Stare and the adoration and
I
had trouble with that. And
her goal in life was to be a good wife, and that's what.
It's not much of a goal. And I hate all this stuff. Oh, she redefined the role as the first lady. Well, the first lady before her was Rosalind Carter, who was this fierce champion for the mentally ill and for the downtrodden. She was an equal to her husband. She was not fashionable. She was interested in things that she, and I agree with her, are more important. And Nancy didn't. Nancy did have a great sense of humor. She was able to ape herself, to make fun of herself, which is a great quality.
She was an actress.
Yeah. That's a great quality. So I don't really completely hate her as I do other first ladies.
Well, she did redefine the first lady thing, and in that she was certainly not from JFK, whose wife was quite a fashionista too, but she certainly insisted on proper decorum, in the White House. And there's a story in the paper about somebody who was working for them.
Peggy Noonan.
Yeah, and
she was
in a pantsuit or something.
Right.
And she got a stare down. And she hid behind a pole the next time she was coming.
Yeah, the thing about Nancy Reagan is she was a bit of an ice queen. And so while you can compare her fashion sense with Jackie Kennedy was not didn't have cold water running through her veins. And Nancy Reagan exuded that kind of persona. She was this fierce protector of her husband. She was, at that time, every feminist's nightmare, because her goal in life was to just be a good wife and to buck up her husband. And it grated. And it's still, when I read it in the article, I was just like, oh, God.
Yeah, you're rolling your eyes. Right. I know. The feeling.
You know,
there's something strange about people who find their true soulmate. And it's, the rest of us kind of envy that, and yet there's something really weird about
it.
Duke and Duchess of Windsor, where everything else is excluded. He dropped his duty to be with his wife. She dropped, you know, the love of her children just to be with him. It's just an exclusionary kind of relationship.
You think it's the height of narcissism, do you?
I don't know. That's just yourself. You make one other person.
You know, it's
sort of like
that. Yourself that you're making this other person.
I admire people who can do that for each other. Myself, I'm of course married to a woman who has a fierce set of careers and has done extremely well. But I think each to their own. Don't you know?
You got the better deal. I'd vote for Roselle over Nancy.
You would? You?
Yes.
Okay.
She also was skinny her whole life. I think I resent that, too.
Oh, really?
I know, because it's so hard. No, she's a fashionista, right? So that was important. How did she do that?
Well, I mean, look. Okay. She was thin. That's not the issue here. My issue with her is Rock Hudson asked them for help when he was dying, and they said no. She said no. They said no. It was only like in the last days or way after that they started saying something. He never said the word AIDS during his entire 8 years in office.
She did change Reagan's mind about AIDS, though. She did turn that around.
It was really a little late for someone who was their good friend. And she was in Hollywood. She knew how many gay men there were in Hollywood. I mean, come on.
Yeah. You know, one of her best friends who said he had the greatest Nancy Reagan stories, unfortunately, he's no longer with us, to now, in her passing, tell them.
Who's that?
Mike Wallace.
Oh.
They were very good friends.
Yeah, they were friends.
The 60 Minutes correspondent.
Carol, I did like the whole astrology thing, though, too. I understand that.
Well,
this is in the
days,
the house.
And this is something else. I mean, her husband gets shot.
Right.
There's an assassination attempt, and she has to deal with that. And then, she comes out of that in the Alzheimer's.
And
but
so you do it by astrology? This is
Can I stop there for a second?
Oh, this is good.
I have to read one letter. And that's from Joni, who says, when Libby was introduced as political consultant to the stars, I immediately thought of Nancy Reagan's astrologer.
Well, halfway intended, actually, yes.
But I'm only political consultant to puppies and kittens. Let's just be clear. Oh, actually, that's not true. I'm a lobbyist for puppies and kittens.
Okay.
Right.
Anybody else want to say anything else on Nancy Reagan, on the passing of Nancy Reagan, 94 years old?
Actually, I just wanted, you know, the New York Times article, you know, talking about her role in the White House, this power behind the throne, getting rid of Donald Reagan, getting rid of guys who she didn't like or didn't run the campaign well enough. I thought that was fascinating. And it goes, and it shows exactly the kind of relationship that they had. He didn't listen to her all the time, but I think that when she wanted something, she got her way.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll move on to other topics, and we welcome your thoughts as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Northshire Bookstore, presenting Writers' Workshop with CNN's John Dedakis Saturday, March 12th from 9 to 3:30 in Manchester, Vermont, northshire.com. Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, North Adams, offering over 50 undergraduate programs of study, from accounting to the arts, as well as master's degree and degree completion opportunities. The Commonwealth's Public Liberal Arts College, mcla.edu. Yum Yum Noodle Bar, Woodstock and Kingston, offering Southeast Asian street food and other Asian specialties. Open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week. YumYumNoodleBar.com. And from College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable.
Looking at
talking about Saran Wrap this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And let us go to other news. It was Super Saturday over the weekend. And what happened? Well, Ted Cruz won two states, and Donald Trump won two states, and Bernie Sanders won two states, and Hillary Clinton won one state. And that is that's sort of the roll call on Super Saturday.
You didn't mention Mr. Rubio.
Mr. Rubio won Puerto Rico yesterday. Yesterday,
but you can't say he won a state. He won a territory.
He won a territory, and yes, and it was that. It was not a Super Sunday. It was it was Sunday's voting. So what do we make of this? And I guess the headline that I want to at least initially focus in on is Ted Cruz.
Well, you know, there are many people who think that Ted Cruz is scarier by far than the Donald. And Joe, if you would be so kind to use that magic machine of yours to look up the current status of delegates, how many each have? Because I think...
I just did that.
And what'd you find?
He's 84 behind. None of them
have...
So he's
very close.
Yeah.
Yes. Cruz is very close.
Trump has 84 more, but both of them are around the under 400,
right.
And you need, that's like about a third less, just a little bit different than a third of what you need.
No, it's a lot different.
Long way to go.
Yeah, he's 87 behind, and so
what is it? What's the numbers?
389 to 302. Rubio has 149. John Kasich has 37. Ben Carson has
8. Where did he get
30?
Oh, I see.
These are a little. Yeah. I just looked up the same thing, and the numbers they're similar but slightly different. I don't know how they're being calculated. I guess because they're proportionate.
Well,
that's unimportant.
You know, the logistics of this thing are that there are those like Mitt Romney who want to see a brokered convention, in which this is denied. However, when you take a look at Trump, but when you take a look at the way this is being done, you get the feeling that that if it's a Republican primary, Republican voters only, then Cruz does better than if you include the possibility of crossover Democrats in a state like mine, Massachusetts, where if you're an unenrolled voter, you can take a ballot in either party. And that's where Trump does better.
So the two things about that I find interesting, one being that, first of all, we should note that it was very close in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
The votes were, it was close. I think Trump only won by about 5,000 mm-hmm. votes, if I'm not mistaken on that. So the question is, the other thing is, well, just a week ago, Mitt Romney was saying, yeah, vote for Rubio in Florida, vote for Ted Cruz in this state, vote for this person, vote for that person, and that way you're bringing the vote around. Well, Rubio is out of it, right? I mean, that's the difference
Rubio's.
of a week. And the first thing that Donald Trump said in his, which I'm beginning to hate, by the way, these press conferences / rallies after elections that he has mm-hmm. at his country clubs, that he said, look, I do believe that Marco Rubio should get out of the race.
Well, you know, it isn't just Trump who has real reasons to get rid of him. It's people who, like Rubio, are getting worried about it. If he goes through Florida and loses, what happens then? He's out of the presidential race. And how does he come back to Florida and say, oh, I'd like to be your senator again?
True.
You know, I did such a great job the last time. So his whole political future is in this decision about when exactly he's going to get out.
So somebody should explain to me what it is exactly that Trump wants, why Trump wants Rubio to get out.
Because he wants to go head-on-head with Ted
that's
Cruz.
That's what he says.
Well, he has good reason for that, too, Alan, because Cruz is not going to beat him in the big states. How is Cruz going to win California?
Yeah, can't.
Yeah, Ohio.
Yeah.
I think Trump's right.
I mean, Alan sent this out this morning, but the New York numbers are in for Trump and
huge.
Well, in New York State, which you would expect,
mm-hmm.
but back to your point of
big states.
Mm-hmm. Can Ted Cruz win?
Well, maybe
win
if
big states, California, New York,
Ohio. Maybe
if
Rubio gets, he wants Rubio out so Kasich can get some more delegates. I don't, you know, because you know, if we go into a brokered convention, it could end up being Kasich because he's more palatable to the mainstream of the Republicans.
It's true, and not
Kasich Rubio.
Yeah.
If Rubio's out, although you never know because that does happen. But it's all a crapshoot for between now and when the convention comes. If Cruz continues to win some delegates, it takes wind out of Donald's sails.
Well, look, if they go into a brokered convention, Donald is not going to be the candidate.
That's right. He's
period.
Not. And so they want to keep siphoning off the delegates from him.
Yep.
What?
Why is Trump so emphatically not going to be the candidate if it goes into a brokered convention?
Because the Republican establishment doesn't want him. They think that he's a, quote, deal maker. They think he will go from their orthodoxy over things like abortion and things like that, and he might.
I understand the motivation,
but is the rationale? And I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, the rationale being why have a brokered convention if you are not going to overturn him, right? I mean, if they know it's a fait accompli and he's going to be the nominee, then they're not going to go through the
right. But Rosemary's question is a good one, one she asks a lot, and is correct. So if I mean, what do we find? We think that if the Republicans don't get their nominee and do get a Trump who can go anywhere, make friends with the Democrats, do deals on abortion, do deals on other stuff, that this will kill them because of their own orthodoxy. So they don't want that to happen. And there's a second reason, and that is power. So if Trump is in office, there's no deal that can be made that he will give them this appointment
what
and that
want.
Appointment.
This is true.
Okay. You have misunderstood my question. Oh, I understand the
that.
Motivation. I know that the establishment wants him out. What I'm saying is that if he goes in with a huge number but not enough to actually nail it down, how does the establishment, which has been incredibly ineffective through this whole process, beat him at a brokered convention? What's the mechanics of that? What's their technique?
Well, it's the party chairs from the states that will be holding.
Well, and how much
those,
damage did they do to the party in the process,
right,
too?
Right.
Not to mention democracy.
Yeah, but the party chairs will be holding those delegates and promises
will
be made. No, I
agree with you completely.
I think Trump has a lot more power than these officials think.
Exactly.
And I don't think he'll lose at a contested
convention. But, I mean, and we only have about 10 seconds, but the other thing, to Alan's point, this delegate race is still very tight. And if this negative keeps on going, we'll see what happens. We'll be right back after a short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the round table. And because it is apropos of absolutely nothing, I just have to say one of the best quotes ever heard during a break is, Lord Grantham is a hell of a lot better than you.
And that coming as we've been discussing in Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, the finale.
Yeah, and my feeling that it's terrible because Roselle won't go to bed with me on Sunday nights.
Okay,
so
let's
then,
go to the next story,
so
shall
then,
we?
So then back down.
Yeah, no. Let's go to the next story. What's next, Joe?
All right.
Are you too much information?
Yes, mm-hmm. TMI. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to say it to us. It's another thing to say it to 400,000 listeners.
Oh, dear. So we were talking before, and then we'll go to some letters. I just want to touch on this because Rosemary mentioned it. It was the Rust Belt story about Michigan and looking at Michigan. Neil Moore and talking about the support for Donald Trump versus Ted Cruz. And what is Donald Trump's appeal to blue-collar voters, mostly whites, and will that continue to drive his popularity in Michigan? He is leading in the polls ahead of Tuesday, although it's closing in.
Yes, it's tighter than one would think. But
been beating the hell out of him every day.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's anger. He is, as we've said before, he's just tapping into people's anger. The people in the Rust Belt are very angry that their jobs went away. But it was interesting in the article, the guy from Ford kept saying, look, he keeps harping on how much we spent in Mexico, but we spent five times that amount in the United States and have brought many, many jobs back. But, Trump just keeps to his sound bites and keeps hammering away regardless of the facts, as we all know.
I want to just change one thing. A very interesting analysis that I read this weekend about the rise of authoritarianism in the United States. It's not anger. It's fear. People are afraid that their future is not secure, that their children are going to be off. And so you naturally look for a scapegoat. Hitler knows this. It has happened all over the world. And so the outsider becomes the bad person. Take care of those outsiders, and then we'll be better. And that is what Trump has unerringly hit into, and that's why he's so dangerous. So this idea that we're spending too much money abroad, we don't spend that much.
Right.
Most Americans have a very inflated idea of how much money we're spending, say, on foreign aid. It's just simply not true.
I just want to say that fear and anger and fear and hate are
close together,
intricately linked.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you fear, which is what he's talking to, you then end up hating, which is the natural, you know, progression of that. So, yes, the authoritarian part of this, they're afraid. Everyone is afraid.
And so you have the spectacle, and you've pointed this out before, Libby, where Trump is up there and a black protester goes through, or a woman in a hijab, and he's exorting the crowd, get them out of here,
In one of the Carolinas,
you're out, you're out.
In South Carolina, he said, all of you raise your hand, your right hand. And like, you know,
the visual was very
like,
scary.
Yes. All of you raise your right hand. And
I don't know
hand,
if it's completely
promise to vote
fair,
for me is
but,
what
it, is,
said, yeah.
but it is.
But his hand, the picture I saw of his hand was not up straight. It was up on an angle like Hitler's was. And all the other people, they were all raising their hand, vowing to vote for him and only him. Now, this is the kind of stunt that makes me think, is he real? Does he really believe anything that he's saying? Or is he just manipulating people for the sake of being able to manipulate them and show how people
just,
will just be led to the slaughter.
Just on the part of playing it fair here, you think that the other candidates aren't trying to figure out what the sensitive buttons are that they can push with voters?
Of course. Of course they do. But what do you decide to do? Do you play on people? Look, in 2000,
what do you think they decided to?
Bush decided to play on people's fear of gay marriage and gay people in general, and that's one of the reasons he got elected. That was the wedge. We were the wedge issue. Now the wedge issue is that Trump has created is the Muslim community and fear of Muslims and everything and ISIS and everything that else that's going on, and it's got a worldview.
But there are others besides Trump who are doing the same thing.
Sure, but you know, Hillary is trying to push people's other buttons, the buttons that come from love and hope rather than fear and hate.
We'll see. By the way, I just want you to know, in terms of what you said earlier, Joe, we've gotten just a news release from our friend Lee Merengoff.
Yes.
At the Marist Poll, NBC News, Wall Street Journal, Marist Poll. In Michigan, businessman Donald Trump and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton have commanding leads over their competition, the contest for their respective parties' nomination for President of the United States. It's amazing.
I just want to
2-1.
I just want to touch on something that Libby said, then we'll move on, because there was also a Democratic debate last night in Flint, Michigan.
Was.
We're talking about the Rust Belt. It's really surprising when you watch, after watching the Republican debate, to watch the Democratic debate, and you're like, oh, wow, substance? What is this? I don't know the size of anything in this. This is great.
Bernie's is bigger, by the way.
Yeah. So Bernie Sanders says that white people don't know what it's like to live in a ghetto. He gets a lot of flack over that. And I just want to bring this up to the discussion that took place between Alan and Libby. So I understand the sensitivity of the remark. What I don't understand is how he comes under fire for that and Trump can say whatever the hell he wants.
Yep.
Because he's a Democrat and people expect him to be more enlightened.
To be better than that?
Yes, to be better than that and be more enlightened around these issues.
You know, I don't agree with you. I think that there are two different kind of people, Hillary and Bernie are really remarkable human beings who have who really have a sense of social responsibility. I think the other guys just want to get elected. I think it's that simple. You know, there was a thing that Rosemary and I were fighting, duking it out before the program, and that was that, you know, Bernie got mad and said, I'm still speaking. At an interruption by Hillary, and now there are groups who are trying to make that sound as if it was disrespectful to a woman to mobilize the feminist groups for him. I think. Look, if you're going to be on equal playing fields, then, you know, she can say what she wants. He can say what he wants. He was not disrespectful. He wasn't, what's his name, who walked Caputo or whatever his name, who walked over to the...
Rick Lazio.
He walked over to the other thing and basically looked like he was threatening her. I just think there are times you got to play fair here, folks.
I don't know if this is fair. I don't really think it is.
Do you want it to be fair?
Men cannot treat women the same as other men in debates.
But you're looking for equality.
Joe Biden, to me, was the epitome of this when he had to take on Sarah Palin, who was an idiot compared to him. He knows all of this stuff.
Right, and
he was flawless.
Yes.
He never said, "Excuse me, I'm still talking." He would just smile and put his head down, and you felt like, God, she's a jerk.
Well, how can
and
you
he
have?
He didn't do it. He did not finesse it, Alan.
There was no reason for him to wag his finger and say, "Excuse me, I'm still talking." It was a debate.
He looked like Trump. Trump was doing, excuse me, you know that,
yeah.
With the finger in the
like
air.
Trump.
He looked like Trump.
Come on. You guys are so seriously.
Look, there was one person to hate in that debate, and it wasn't Hillary Clinton or
Bernie
Sanders.
Who was it?
Don Lemon.
Oh, my God.
Let's focus our hatred to one human being. Okay?
I totally agree with you.
I hate him so much.
Because he's an idiot.
He's a jerk. He says the most stupid things at the most inappropriate time.
Why does he still have his job? Because he's a gay black man?
Well, I don't know.
He won't have it for long. I mean, well, CNN puts on a bunch of bad people and then yanks them off. Elliot Spitzer was not good in that job. And I don't know. I don't expect he'll be around long. He is just awful. He's silly.
He was in 2015 by the American Journalism.
The Society Council
named him the worst journalist
of
the year.
Yes, they did.
Okay, Alan, letters.
All right. And this is from Cliff, who says, Trump is a master manipulator, tapping into and focusing fear and anger has two results. One is creating a mob mentality, and the other is creating positive, constructive change. Trump represents one, and Sanders represents the other. Comments, gang? No. Good morning, friends. Contrasting the Republican debate last week and to the Democratic debate last night, I was struck by the difference in questions. That is to say, the Republicans were not asked any questions that are important, yet they are in real denial about such as global warming, racial politics in America. The scandal of Flint, Michigan. Is an agreement before the debates about what questions will go? If so, what happens to the general election debates? Thanks for your show. Okay. I got that.
Well, the general election debates actually have a commission that is overseen by the parties, and I'm not saying that that's exactly a gold standard, but it's certainly better than what we're currently seeing in these debates.
Oh, I mean, the last Republican debate was a totally new low. Wow. Although there have been stupid questions through the whole series.
Yeah, but I know, but they brought it all. You know, to have to have the conversation, the below-the-belt conversation, you know, it's Chris Churchill in the Times Union had a great piece yesterday about how we've lost our civility and, you know, does he even want his daughter, who will be like 5 or 6 or 7 when Trump is president, to actually watch, you know, a TV and see him as presidency. The idea that, you know, that somebody's endowment is the predicate for whether or not he's a good president or not. I mean, it's so sophomoric. Mm-hmm. It really is just so sophomoric. It's like we're in middle school.
Luca says, Dear Roundtable, so many comment that Trump supporters are angry, but your comment that at its base is fear was spot on and so exploited in Germany by Hitler. That's from Luca. And that is On Target Rosemary.
It's a subject line.
Yes.
On Target Rosemary.
Right. And Charlie says, Zephyr Teachout endorses Bernie Sanders, asking for Rosemary's and the group's thoughts.
I could have predicted it. She was for Obama the last time. She has reservations about Hillary that you've heard many times before. She's establishment. She's dynasty, blah, blah, blah.
Jay says, Hillary should not be allowed to interrupt because she's a woman, for crying out loud. If politics as usual, hawk Hillary, dishonest apologist for Monsanto's GMOs and pesticides, Wall Street, Big Pharma, etc. wins, she will disgrace the presidency, women, and our country, help destroy the environment, and preclude the possibility of a decent, capable woman ever becoming president. I want to see a woman become president, but not a dishonest, hawkish, hypocritical one. I will not vote for her.
Who is that from?
It's gone already.
Are you going to vote for...
I think it's a female.
Are you going to vote for, say, Donald Trump?
No, here's the thing. There will be people who say, I will not vote for Hillary, or I will not vote for Bernie, or, and many of them will not vote, period, which is a vote for the Republican if they are a born Democrat. I mean, that's just the way it is. We all know that. You can vote by going to the polls. You can vote by not going to the polls. Mm-hmm. Either way, same thing. And as to my reaction to Zephyr endorsing, Bernie, she has a constituency, too.
Yes, she does.
And she has to
please
her constituency.
And she's running for Congress. And
I think her support is heartfelt. It's personal. It isn't just to get votes.
Well, she's a friend of yours, right?
Look what she did.
Yeah,
she primaried the establishment gubernatorial Democrat, right? And
yes.
So it makes sense for her to be in Bernie's camp.
We used to have big debates when it was Obama, Clinton, and I felt guilty. I've told her this since that time, that I wasn't a stronger supporter for Hillary Clinton then. That those of us who supported her listened to all this sort of stuff like the last letter and didn't counter it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. We'll have another topic or two. And we welcome your thoughts. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Seneca Lake Wine Trail, presenting the Cruise in the Tropics weekend. Over 30 wineries pair their wines with tropical-themed dishes. March 18th through the 20th, SenecaLakeWine.com. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gifts, certificates, and photo gallery. And from Underground Railroad History Project, 15th public conference featuring Barbara Smith and Angelica Clark. Moving between the intersectional identities in the struggle for justice, April 15th, UndergroundRailroadHistory.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning for this Monday, the 7th of March. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Libby Post making up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters again. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was on 60 Minutes last night.
I saw it.
He was great.
Ahead
of
his first official trip to Washington, D.C., he has suggested that his counterparts south of the border would do well to know more about the rest of the world. In the interview, Trudeau was asked about what Canadians perhaps disliked about Americans. He answered in stereotypical Canadian fashion, suggesting, quote, it might be nice if Americans paid a little more attention to the world.
Yeah. He's right. I mean, if it comes out to be a Sanders-Trump race, I might write in his name. Cruz is running. He's Canadian too, right, according to Trump?
Yes.
I think he's right. One-third of Americans have passports. That's far below the number of people who have passports in other industrialized Western nations. We have extremely distorted views about foreign policy. We've become increasingly jingoistic and xenophobic, and at a time when the United States should be a big player, continue to be a big player in the world. So I think he has a lot of points.
You know,
right.
When I was in college, we used to debate, and that was a long, long, long time ago, we used to debate, is there such a thing as national character? Mm-hmm. And at the time, the answer was no. Countries don't have national character. Mm-hmm. Germany doesn't have a national character. The United States doesn't have a national character. So what he was alluding to was that we do have a national character. Mm-hmm. And I think the Canadians have a national character. And I think in many ways that national character is a lot more understanding and open than the American national mm-hmm. character, which right. we see the evolution of a Trump.
Well, right. just to get back to what Rosemary was saying, you know, when we were in Europe in November, we watched CNN Europe, we watched BBC. Yep. The tenor of the news, the breadth of the news is so much different there mm-hmm. than it is here. And people get their news from the three major networks, mm-hmm. Facebook, other places. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and people keep harping about corporate media, media monopoly, and it's absolutely true. You know, but the way news is delivered here and what's delivered here is so much different than it is over in Europe.
Well, I was in Uganda in 2004, presidential election in 2004, and the debates came on. And people watching, they stayed up to watch them. They knew all the issues. They knew everything about U.S. Involvement in Africa. How many of us would know?
Right.
And of course, we don't know anything about Uganda. You know, why should we? But we don't even know that about our own country. Mm-hmm. And I would say the same. I see that in students who take international reporting. They realize they have a deficiency, so I applaud them for taking the courses. But no sense of geography or history or foreign policy, current events.
And that makes them much easier to manipulate.
Right.
That's the whole
Absolutely.
Point.
Right. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And, like, I don't want to know. I don't care. It's not important to me. It's not, you know,
it's
the next
relevant.
New fashion.
Yep.
So, more water's out.
Okay. Russell says, cracking, colon, candidate, question mark, fracking, Hillary for Sanders, Hillary for, Sanders against, clear distinction for teach out.
That's true.
And Arnold, we don't want to talk to Arnold. No, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
One of those things. Okay. John says, thinking about the role Nancy had in the Reagan administration, the thought that a married couple act together, haven't the Clintons already had their shot? And I am just waiting for Trump to put on a banana republic military uniform, and that's from David. Okay.
That's true.
And Bonnie says, panel, in a debate, doesn't the gloves come off to some degree? Maybe the Republicans weren't issued gloves, but at least the Democrats kept theirs on. Interruption of an opponent by talking over, shouting, etc., only proves who the grown-up isn't.
You know, that whole interruption in the middle of a debate, I get some of this right here in the panel. I mean, you're into the conversation. You want to make your point. You don't quite know when the other person is going to say something. It's not really rudeness many times. I mean, it can be.
No, I mean, we got a letter over the weekend about disrespect of one another and that way I wrote back and I said everyone's passionate about their thing, about
right.
their issue and We all respect each other. We wouldn't be here, and
exactly.
you know, it's hard to. Sometimes I guess that's hard to get, but I don't think when you're in the heat of the moment, I don't think you're.
So yeah. here's
the thing. I don't think it's so.
This
bad.
Is the debate. They interrupt each other. That's just the way
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see you guys are coming around. So.
No. He couldn't deal with the fact that she was going to interrupt.
Oh, and you think interrupting is okay?
Well, I learned from the best.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, in that case, I could never get a word in here.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Emily says, wait, Rosemary would write in Trudeau's name instead of Bernie if he won the nomination? Didn't you all just criticize Bernie supporters who wouldn't vote for Hillary if she
Emily,
was nominated?
Emily, come on. It was a joke. No, I would put in Bernie's name if he's the Democratic candidate.
No, but I have a question for all of you. If you were to take the vitriol, which we see coming at us in the mail and in every other way, and ask the following question, who is angrier right now? The Libby supporters? No, I'm
Libby
so sorry.
Supporters.
I want to change that. The
what
Hillary,
are you running for?
The Hillary supporters, the same thing as Libby supporters. The Hillary supporters or the Bernie supporters. Who seems to be angrier right now?
The Bernie supporters.
Okay, so you guys are both for your Hillaryites.
We're for the establishment.
You're for your Hillaryites.
Yeah, and not the guy who's been in government 30
okay,
years.
Okay, so you know. my question is, you both believe that it is the Hillary supporters, excuse me, the Bernie supporters, who are angrier right now.
Oh, yeah.
I get mail every day. Why didn't NPR say more about Bernie. Why didn't you? I mean, nobody's talked more about Bernie than I have and interviewed Bernie more than I have, but they get mad at me. They're very, very angry, and I suspect frustrated, and I agree with you. I think the Bernie supporters are angrier right now.
So what's the point of that?
Well, the point of it is it's an interesting socio-psycho-analysis
of what's going on. The other thing that's happening is that the sexism of the far-left men is really coming out.
The thing about you and Rosemary is you play that card way too often.
We're not playing as the soon card. As we're exploring an interesting sociological phenomenon.
As long as somebody isn't with you, you take the feminist card out of the deck and throw it at them.
We only have 2 minutes, but explain exactly your point of view. I don't understand what you're saying. So how can you play a card? A minute ago we were saying that he was okay to you get in the heat of battle and you start saying things.
No. It's his the supporters. His supporters. Okay. They're really being sexist. They're really saying nasty things about her because she's a woman. And you know, just all you got to do is look at Facebook feeds, and you see it all the time. I'm not going to say what they're saying.
You see the other thing too, way around.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. But you know, you're asking us what we're looking at.
I'm not seeing nasty things about Bernie anywhere.
Oh,
about Bernie anywhere?
I just saw an image of him on a piece of toast.
No, but I think
that's about his chances. That's not about.
I think the reason for that, Rosemary, is that he's trailing. If he were the leader, then you might find something else.
Let's talk about Peyton Manning.
Okay, Peyton Manning is retiring. He's announcing his retirement today.
I think he's wanting to get out of the media maelstrom that's coming.
I feel bad.
For drugs and sexual harassment. Yeah. He also has so many injuries. The guy, you know, he hurts.
Yeah, I mean, I think
18 years
that
he's rich, he's accomplished everything. Why not get out?
Right.
And he's going to end up, you know, being in management. Yeah. Football.
I worry about him. How's he going to make a living?
He'll be okay. I think he'll be okay. All right, we're out of time. Thank you to everyone who wrote in and for listening this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Libby Post, thank you very much for being with us.
You are
welcome.
A pleasure,
as always. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.